Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Shane Warne.
He's the most amazing human being.
Amazing guy, extraordinary energy. He gave this life a good crack. I mean, he fitted more in his 52 years than most of us do in 90 of them.
Warne was an all-time great, a once-in-a-century type cricketer, and his records will live on forever.
Got him! There it is! Wicket number 700, and they can't catch him!
We'll still be talking about Shane Warne in 100 years.
What would I say? I would say that I would trust him with my life.
I mean, he was just a brilliant, brilliant bowler. I mean, that goes without saying.
First ball in Test cricket in England for Shane Warne. And he's done it. He started off with the most beautiful delivery.
We can talk about him as a rock and roll character. He was generous to a fault. He lived life to the full. He was Peter Pan.
I would rate him as one of the great enthusiasts for anything.
Everything about Shane Warne was that good, the man and the cricketer.
He was just a wonderful human being, and it's just such a tragedy. I don't know how to really describe any more than that, to be honest.
Put it this way, the game was definitely richer for having him in it, that is for sure. And he made spin bowling cool, for goodness sake.
Bowled him! There it is, the battle's over! And Shane Warne gets his fourth. What a delivery!
2005, just epitomised what Shane Warne was.
He could do what others couldn't, and he would dare to do what others wouldn't.
He was so good at times you felt that he was trying to keep you in just so that he could have a bit more fun.
Of all the people you could imagine being a terrible loss, he's top of the list, really, because he gave so much. I say, you summed it up well, he gave so much in so many areas.
The game was never the same after Warne emerged, and the game will never be the same after his passing.
There was something elemental about Warne, like the wind and the rain, or the sun. He could be a wild and unpredictable ride, and he could be a warm and kindly neighbour. He brought things into our lives that were unique, and he illuminated the spaces we occupied. None of us would suggest that we were anything but lucky to stand in that light. It wasn't quite exclusively his world in which we lived, but it wasn't far from it. Shane loved Springsteen's music, and especially the most recent album, Letter to You. It finished with a song called I'll See You in My Dreams, which is a eulogy of sorts to a friend who has passed, and which Shane said had made him cry. Now the tears are ours for the loss of an irreplaceable brother in arms. Goodness, there's so much that we'll miss. He was very funny and great fun. He was naughty, but in the best sense, and he was smart. In the streetwise sense, he made people happy, which is a gift, and he made people stronger with his support and with his counsel. He was generous, and he was kind. He put himself up for charity, an hour's coaching at Lord's with Shane Warne for 10 people, and it would sell for a shedload, and he'd meet the buyers, charm them utterly, and do double the time with the group that they sent along, or longer still, if they were enthusiastic kids. He had friends in high places, and friends from the sticks. He learnt to play tennis on the court in Bob Hawke's backyard, and years later fired up the pizza oven for Chris Martin and Ed Sheeran to have chilled nights in his own backyard. Michael Parkinson and Tim Rice took him out for lunch at the Ivy. Coldplay called him on stage to sing with them during a sell-out concert in Melbourne. At Sunnydale Golf Club one day, Sean Connery heard Warney was putting out on the 17th green and stayed behind an extra 15 minutes just to meet him. Bond wanted to meet Warne. He hung out with Danny Minogue, Jemima Khan, and became engaged to Elizabeth Hurley. And on Twitter, Mick Jagger, no less, mourned his passing. So, just over a week ago, we lost Shane Warne in shocking circumstances, really, from seemingly nothing. He had always seemed indestructible to those of us who knew him well, and we certainly couldn't have imagined anything immediate in our lives that would happen without him around. He was a great friend, a great character, an enormously strong personality, and, of course, a brilliant cricketer. And over these two lunch intervals, Darren Goff and I will celebrate him, first today, the man, and tomorrow, more specifically, the cricketer. Goffy is alongside me, knew him really well, played a lot of cricket against him, and is missing his mate, really. It's as simple as that sometimes, isn't it?
It is. It hit me really hard, I must admit. I was over in Dubai at the time. I couldn't quite believe it. I saw he'd posted the evening before. He'd just got there on a friend's holiday, time to chill out and stuff like that. And then you wake up the next day and you get that terrible news. And it hit me hard, as it probably did thousands and thousands and thousands of people that were lucky enough to meet him or play with him or against him. Because what he taught me, Mark, over the years is when I first met him, and I'll get on to one of the stories when I first met him, is just from watching a test match. He never used to sign during the game, did he? During playing hours. But after a day, he used to sit there for hours and just sign every single autograph for every single person. And he taught me a lesson from on that day when I first saw him do it, is but you can be as focused as you want, but you have to give your time back to people that matter. And he used to sit there for hours, Mark, and you know him better than anyone, and he used to do that. But the first time I met him was amazing, really. A guy we both know, David Norrie, a journalist, took me and Warnie out in Brisbane the 2 days before the first test match I was going to be playing in 94. Warnie obviously was just coming through as a proper superstar then. And we went for dinner to this real posh fish restaurant in Brisbane. And David Norrie, typical, ordered him a bottle of wine for himself and had ordered the oysters to start and a fish main course, fish of the day, whatever. Me and Warnie, and we'd never met, by the way, we both looked at each other and we both, just by looking at each other, knew exactly what was coming. And it was toasted cheese and ham sandwiches and chips and a pint of lager. And we both ordered exactly the same thing, and we hit it off from that moment in time. And we always kept in touch over many, many years, whether I played with him, whether we played golf together, which we all played golf with him on plenty of occasions. And I've done a TV advert with him for Advanced Air Studios. Not my greatest advert, or is what we've done in our lives, but we've been friends for many, many years, and he's one of the few people I actually play with or against that I've kept in touch with. So that made it harder.
I chatted with his father, Keith, this morning in Melbourne, and he said that, you know, he was very overwhelmed. The whole family were very overwhelmed by everything that had happened in the last 10 days of their life. But obviously, it's a hell of a build-up to the family funeral on Sunday and then the state funeral 10 days later. He said what he was most pleased about was the overriding impression that people had given of the person. Of the man, you know, it's sort of accepted how wonderful a cricketer he was, and we'll talk about that more tomorrow. But he was thrilled that the fact that Shane Warne was a fabulous person, generously spirited, as we've just heard your story. You know, he used to line them up, didn't he? When there were too many people, he'd organise the queue for the autograph.
Unbelievable.
He'd set them up. So you guys come there, then you can come turn left around that corner and then you'd be ready and then we can move faster that way.
It was a show in itself, wasn't it? It was a show to watch him Warnie sign autographs. He turned that into something what you had to watch.
And sometimes you'd take the selfie, but no, mate, I'm better with a phone than you. I'll do that.
Were you at the game? Well, he did that as well. KP does that, by the way. Were you at the game when he had to go out at the MCG? And go and organise all the crowd, because I think it was one couple of games. somebody were hitting a golf ball, weren't they, onto the pitch, and we had to come off. Twice he had to do it. And he went onto the pitch and obviously calmed everyone down. And then another time...
Well, when... Alex, they were... Because of there was an England fielder on the boundary who was hit by a golf ball. And Alex Stewart was now worried about his boundary fielders in a really tense one-day international.
Yeah, I was one of them.
You were playing, yeah. And so he called Warnie out. And Warnie went the whole way across the ground. Then do you remember what happened? He got near to that Bay 13 area on the far side from the dressing rooms. And he borrowed a crash helmet from one of the batsmen. And he put it on. And he went to the crowd and he pointed at the crash helmet as if to say, that's what these fielders need. You're going to have to cut this out. Otherwise, we won't. And he took the crash helmet off. And then he bowed as they cheered. And then he asked them to bathe themselves. And they did. And the game continued. It was an amazing bit of showmanship. But actually, it was a measure of the stock in which he was held at home in Melbourne. And actually, you could say all over the world. I reckon if he'd done that anywhere, the crowd would have responded in the same way.
Absolutely. And I think one of the things what people are going to know about Shane Warne is, and you touched on it there, Mark, at the start of your article, is but how generous he was with his time. He used to donate so much time. He came over to England. He changed in between Australia and the UK. He had a lot of work here. And he used to come over here and donate so many days to charity. And he always ended up doing far too many, more than his diary would allow him. But I've got so many messages. You know when you do this and you start going through your phone and you're going through all the messages and the things he sent me, for the boss here, by the way, we'd met only once before, an Australian, huge Scott Taunton, and he sent him a lovely message on his birthday, 50th birthday, and he did stuff like that, no matter where he was in the world, whether he were commentating in Australia, New Zealand, South Africa, or India, or whether he was in the UK just around the corner, he'd just stop, do the video, and send it, and he was so generous with his time, and he did so much for charity, and I feel now, I was so lucky to meet him, so lucky to play against one of the greatest cricketers the world's ever seen and get to know him as a friend. And only last October, Mark, we spent so much time with him, didn't we, at the Dunnell Links in Scotland. We had a terrific time. I was in a bubble because we had to be in a bubble during that period. And our bubble was Rick Lewis, his good friend, the guy who's got the love hearts on the caps, which you'll have seen Warnie wear on numerous occasions, me, Rooty, and Vaughnie. And we had a terrific 6 days in Scotland. Mm. And I'll remember that forever. Absolutely now, forever.
You talk about all the texts. I mean, here's one from Raj and Amal, the BBC journalist. How much less bright and gold this world will be without him. He was sunshine made flesh. And he was. He brightened a room. In fact, he brightened everything that you did. So let's have a little bit more fun because... Crikey, he took some risks. I mean, he played the tables. He loved his poker. He loved a bet on the golf that he played. And he sort of took life to the limit in every single way. When he went out with him, it was the ultimate night out, wasn't it? And your last one was at the Dunhill Links Championship earlier. Well, no, not earlier this year. Sorry, in October.
October, yeah.
And it, the night before he went out to play, made the cut. He went out to play the final round in which he, of 9 handicap, shot 70 around St Andrews, 2 under par of a 9 handicap, gross. And he was getting 11 shots. And they were 16 under, him and Ryan Fox, his professional partner. And they only failed by one shot to win the tournament. And you were with him to 4 o'clock in the morning, dare I say.
Well, 2 days at left. Of course, we was in bubbles and we couldn't go out in St Andrews, which Warnie would always love a little visit into St Andrews. He loves the place, right? So we had this marquee up, which Johan, obviously the organiser and owner of the golf tournament, had set up. And we literally was there, the last to leave, 2 nights before the final round. And then on the night before the final round, there's a big party, isn't there, with lots of fireworks. And I said, and I joke about it now, it's one of the, I've never seen Warnie. I never see Warnie as a big drinker. I never saw him as a...
No, he's a binge drinker.
Yeah, I never saw him as a big
drinker. He wouldn't drink for weeks on end.
Yeah, exactly.
And then when he had a night out, it was Monster.
Yeah, and it was a Monster.
Vodka and Red Bull.
And I think he was so nervous because he very rarely made the final round, did he? And he made it, and he was so shocked he made it because it was like the last 4. He knocked me out, by the way. He knocked me out. I was in the final round, and he knocked me out by birdie in the last 2 holes with his partner Ryan Fox.
Last 3. I was playing with him.
Yeah, so he knocked me out.
He birdied the last 3 holes, which the only way they could make the cut was if they birdied the last 3.
Correct.
And Warne did it himself. Foxy hit it into a bush at their third hole from home, and Warnie made a three at the par four. He then made a two at the par three, and he then they both birdied the par five last.
He did, and I think he was so nervous, and he thought he's got no chance of winning because he just made it, didn't he, into that final round.
Yeah. That was Kings Barnes. We were playing it the wrong way around. Any golf expert out there picking me up on that? It was Kings Barnes, and we started on the back nine, and so he was playing the front nine. Yeah. Second, if you see what I mean. So he birdied 7, 8 and 9. Actually, he birdied 6, 7, 8 and 9, in fact. But anyway. So you're going hard. He's bowling leg breaks at Michael Vaughan, who's batting with a Coke bottle, and Joe Root's fielding at Silly Point. Maybe I shouldn't tell these stories away. It was holiday time, though, and you were at short leg.
Yeah, I was at short leg, and I say it was a great evening, and we had so much fun. And I want to tell you a story what happened, actually, as well. During our round that day, we all used to meet in the Jigger. After we'd all played our rounds at different places. So some might be playing at Carnoustie, some might be playing at Kings Barnes, some might be playing at St Andrews. So we sat down, we're having a chat. So our bubble, right, it's Rick Lewis, me, Warnie, and Rooty. And he sat down, Joe Root, and he tried to persuade, I didn't know if you know this, Mark, he tried to persuade Warnie to coach England in the build-up to the Ashes last winter. And Warnie, you can imagine the smile on his face. He was, you could see he wanted to do it, but he was also that loyalty to Australia. But Joe kept asking him and asking him and asking him. And I thought he was getting closer and closer and closer. And he said, let me think about it and I'll give you a call. And then 2 days after the tournament finished, Warnie texted me. He said, have you got Joe's number, by the way? I forgot to get his number. And I thought, he's going to do it. He's going to do it. And obviously it didn't happen. But
A challenge.
He did.
And of course, how do I say this? He would help anybody. There was no, you don't play for Australia or you don't play for Hampshire or you don't play for, Melbourne. I mean, Victoria, it doesn't matter. I will help you, and not just with leg spin. He would talk to you about the psychological side of the game, of which he was a master, of course. He'd talk to you about, if you were a batsman, he'd talk to you about what a bowler was looking for, what flaws in your technique he'd try to expose in certain situations. He loved the game. He loved helping people with the game, and he didn't mind the idea of a stronger England. He thought a stronger England was very important for cricket. He liked Joe Root. He thought he had a bit to learn about captaincy. He wanted him to make more runs in Australia. They were the two things he felt about Root, and he thought he could help him with both of those things. So he did think about it.
Mark, he used to call me up when we were playing against other teams when we were playing at the time and give me advice on how to bowl to certain players from other countries. I couldn't believe that. So I got if not the biggest legend who was playing at the time, calling me up and giving me advice on how to bowl to other players from other countries, whether it be Cullen and whether it be Jack Callis, whether it be, you know what I mean? He was amazing to just give you advice and stuff. And he was a spinner, and I was a kind of fast bowler, but he was still felt he was knowledgeable enough to give me advice on and how to get them out. And I appreciated that.
Yeah, you both emerged pretty much the same time. So he was 92 and then made his name really with that ball to Mike Gadding in 93 in England. Then you came into the England side in 94 against New Zealand, but toured Australia in 94-5. So the first time England played in Australia against Shane Warne was with you in the side. And two big characters, larger-than-life characters, leading the expression of character and personality in their teams. And that was very much like-minded souls, but operating on opposite sides of the fence. How much time would the teams have spent together with each other after matches in those days? Would you have a drink in the dressing room after play and that kind of a thing?
Well, I think because we both love the game, and I remember one of the early, after Des Player, the players then, it was just that swap over where a lot of players just disappeared. But I remember going in the dressing room with Graham Gooch, Mike Gatting, Mike Atherton, and it might have been Alex Stewart. They're the only ones that stayed behind after the first day in Brisbane. And along came Warnie, Healy, Boone. And I'll never forget that because they're in the dressing room and you're chatting just cricket. We're legends of the game. I was just a young kid. And Warnie was really same age as me. Was a young kid as well, but we were both there just gathering information from legends of the game. And I think that's when we kind of hit it off, where we were very similar personalities, I would say. The way we played the game, the way we probably are in our personal. We want to help people. We love the game. But he took superstardom to another level. I mean, totally
well, that
a different
was my point, and that,
superstardom to anybody else.
Yeah, that piece that I wrote about him that appeared on Crick Info, but I you know, talking about the fact that, you know, Sean Connery wanted to meet him and Mick Jagger wanted to say goodbye to him and Chris Martin and Ed Sheeran came for barbecues around at his place. You know, he could mix it, but he was
he
the
loved
same.
It though, Mark,
he was
he?
The same with the ordinary fella as he was with the superstar. Exactly the same.
Exactly the same. But I think he was suited to superstardom. That's what I mean. He was comfortable in superstardom. He enjoyed being around big, huge personalities, big names, superstars, where a lot of us aren't. But I think with Shane Warne, no matter who he meets, they will know who he is. I said, Mick Jagger walks down the street and sees Shane Warne. He goes and chats to him, right? It's a little bit like Chris Gayle. Chris Gayle at the minute. Everybody knows who Chris Gayle is. And I think Warne, in a way, no matter where he was in the world, anybody who's anybody would know who Shane Warne was.
Okay, I'm going to read a little more from that piece. He became a terrific commentator, listening and learning from others and applying his remarkable cricketing intelligence to the stories he was telling. He liked cricket kept simple. He loved the game to fizz and to sparkle, and he believed implicitly that attack was the ultimate answer to defence. He spread a gospel of spirit and enterprise, trusted his intuition, raged against the dullards, and refused to believe that anything was beyond him or the teams for which he played. He lived off the blame the messenger and always get ahead of yourself mantra that, when you think about it, is pretty much exactly how he lived in every situation in which he found himself. He made cricket cool, and he made those around him happy. It was extraordinary, Goffey, wasn't it? That blame the messenger and always get ahead of yourself. Nothing was ever his fault, and he'd always moved on to the next thing. He refused to have regrets about things.
Exactly, and he just news. He's just Mr. News wherever he goes. People want a bit of Shane Warne. He's such a huge character, good-looking bloke, sport billy, known all around the world. He wanted to be involved in anything that was going on. His loves in his life, obviously, with his family, but he loved... I mean, golf was right up there, wasn't it, alongside cricket. And people think, oh, he was just a great at cricket, but he loved the game as well. He worked in it, and he wanted to be coach. He talked about being coach of England, didn't he, only last month, and wishing, but he's going to apply for it. He'd love to have a go at that. He was doing the London Spirit in the 100. He was doing his commentary. He'd been with the Rajasthan Royals as a mentor as well. But when you go back and you learn about the messages, my last message from Warney was, hey, mate, he said, got a tea time tomorrow, Beaverbrook. Me and you are going to take on... TC, which is Zach Crawley's dad, and Rob Key. He said, you're up for it. This was like at 8 o'clock at night. I said, unfortunately, Warney, I'm on the breakfast show tomorrow at TalkSport. I won't be able to make it. This was just before he went back to Australia in the end of October. I, to this moment, I wish I'd have played golf with him. I wish I would have gone and played golf.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Let's turn to his commentary, because he really had become a master of that art. He studied it, he listened to people, he obviously enough, I think, revered Richie Beno, who was his, not, I wouldn't so much say as his teacher specifically, but he was his example, he was his standard. And he learned, he had a habit of repeating himself, and he learned trying not to repeat himself. He felt at times he exaggerated things for the sake of dramatic effect, and he liked to try to pull back on that. He really became an expert commentator. And of course, the brilliance of his cricket mind isn't necessarily easily turned into a television communication, but he found a way, and in the end was as good a listener as perhaps has ever been on the intricacies of the game.
A box office commentator, I think, is a must listen for his opinions. He speaks from his heart, can sometimes get him in trouble, but he's got so much knowledge of the game, working out batsmen for many, many years as the greatest leg spin bowler ever, and one of the top five cricketers of the century, as voted for by Wisden. So there's so much knowledge there, and he wanted to get that knowledge across to everyone that was listening and tried to explain it the best way he could. And sometimes, you're right, a champion cricketer sometimes might not be a champion coach or a champion commentator, but for me, he was definitely that. I enjoyed listening to him.
Yes, I think that's well summed up. So you would think with this multifaceted guy and his gifts that he might have found home life challenging. On the contrary, he was the most marvellous father. So I'll read again. He completely adored his parents, Keith and Bridget. He was a loyal brother and friend to Jason, his brother, and doted on his three children. The girls, Brooke and Summer, are heartbroken their dad won't be walking them down the aisle one day. Jackson, his son and closest mate, is in denial, sure that his father will walk through the door tomorrow. Wonderful husband he may not have been, and that by his own admission. But wonderful father he truly was. The Warnes were a fine family, and it hurts deeply to think of their pain. He was so devoted to those kids. They came first, come what may.
Well, he tried to get them with him wherever he was in the world, wouldn't he? But obviously they've grown up now, and they've got their own lives, and it become harder and harder for them. So he started to spend more time at home. Well, would you
Absolutely
say? I would say
right.
Over the last 2 years, at one point he was literally coming over to the UK, staying in the UK for a few weeks, then flying back to Australia for a week, then coming back to the UK. He did so many air miles, but with COVID as well, he probably ended up spending a lot more time at home. He got really, really close to his kids, closer to his kids. They started to understand him more. I think he accepted, and if you've watched the Shane Warne documentary, but he wasn't great. When he was travelling, when he was playing. Like a lot of us are, we're selfish. And we have loads of regrets about when we're playing and the way we probably were. When we went home, we're a bit distant. We're too focused on trying to be the greatest we could be. And he admits that in the documentary. But I think definitely since he retired, and especially this last 3 years, he was absolutely 100% with his family all the time.
Yeah, and his mum, Bridget, I mentioned that he learned to play tennis on the court in Bob Hawke's backyard. His mum, Bridget, was the housekeeper for the Hawks, for Bob and his and his wife. And Bob used to say, bring the boys round. And Shane and Jason would go around. He'd go on the court with them. Bob Hawke loved tennis, and he taught them. And Shane became a superb tennis player. When he played in some exhibition games with some big-name players. And they all said, whoa, he can really play. Natural ball striker. And Tim Henman had actually fixed a game for him with Tim on grass at Wimbledon this summer, a place where virtually no man except Tim Henman can go. So that sadly won't happen. Yes, a remarkable all-round talent. And his mum, Bridget, who's had a bit of a rough time of late, will be... Well, it's just horrendous to think of how they're missing their boy over there in Australia. So we're telling the story of Shane Warne to some degree. The little stories that Darren and I have gathered over the years and celebrating his life. It comes in two parts as we're covering England in the West Indies. So we've talked about the man today. Finally, his attributes, Goffey, in short from you, the two or three main things that made him such a special person.
His blonde hair, his personality, and his love of life.
His love of?
Life.
Love of life. Blonde hair, personality, love of life, to which I might add generosity of spirit and loyalty of friendship. I'm going to leave you with the last paragraph of that piece that was on Crick Info. So it is that we've come to an end. It seems barely believable that the worn smile is no more. By 52 years of age, he'd had a hell of a run, living 5, maybe 10 lives or more. Every day in every place, the magic appeared in one form or another, and you just had to be lucky enough to be there and have it rub off on you. It's gone now, but better to have loved and lost than not to have known him at all. There will never be another.
Well, that's it for another edition of Following On. Thanks for listening. And if you ever have any ideas for guests or have questions for the likes of Steve Harmison or Neil Manthorpe, feel free to tweet me at Fulham John or via at @cricket_TS. And either I or one of the team will make sure that your questions are read out on the show at the earliest convenience. Also, please take the time to leave a review. And if you're already a subscriber, then tell your mates to do the same. And if you want more content from the likes of Steve Harmison, then head over to his YouTube channel and tell him I sent you. Thanks for listening to Following On.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc. Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.